Welcome back to VME Vaginismus, Let's Name It, Not Shame It. I'm Audrey Cairo, and yes, it's been a long time since you've heard from me. I really can't believe it's been 2 years. And I just want to apologize for being extremely quiet. But do know I did not forget about you. I was just trying to spin too many plates while I was educating myself on all the things and also vaginismus topics. But I'm back, switching my focus back on you and trying to find different ways to support you along the way. But yeah, as we know, in a past podcast series, I have focused mostly on sharing stories of other vaginismus warriors. While I hope to continue doing that and for it to come back, the coming few podcasts, I decided that I want to speak to some amazing supporters who we can learn from and who carry some knowledge, either through research or their profession, and who have been supporting you and your V in various different ways. So one thing that I'm a big advocate for is to learn more about our bodies. And while we learn what vaginismus is, I really feel we need to keep talking about our pelvic floor. So how great is it to kickstart this season with the vagina coach, Kim Vapni, who is a self-professed pelvic health advocate. As the author of Your Pelvic Floor, a practical guide to solve your most intimate problems, I was excited to speak to her and talk about a group of muscles that we can take for granted so easily. So let's talk about our pelvic floor. While this set of muscles has more than just one functionality, let's dive in and be curious. So have a listen and let me know what you think. Hi, Kim.
Hello.
I am so happy to have you here today.
I'm really excited to be here today. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I am so pleased. I always think that when I reach out to people that I'm not sure if they're going to come back, especially if I have read something about them or if I've seen them on Instagram. I'm like, would they want to be on the podcast? Let me just send an email and see what they say.
You never know. You never know.
You never know. So, but I'm very, very happy to have you here. It might be a bit random because what I said to you before we pressed record is that I remember being very excited to run towards the Vagina Museum in London when I saw that you were speaking that day. And that was in January 2023, I think.
Correct.
And, yeah, and it was a great event because it was you and some others who all had done something related to the vagina or like menstrual health or menopause. And I was very excited because I thought, ah, I actually have been following her and I think she's Canadian, right? She's not
I'm Canadian.
I know. So there's a bit of a time difference. I'm in London. You're in Canada. Like, what time is it now?
It is just after 10 o'clock in the morning on Thursday.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're starting your day where I'm ending
you're
my
ending.
Day. Yes. So I really hope to make this a good start to your morning, I'll say. But yeah, again, thank you. So I'm very, very excited just because what I said to you earlier is that, you know, before the podcast that I created was very much stories of others. And of course, I still want to hear your story too. But I also feel like how important certain things are for women with a vagina or women with vaginismus. So along the way, I will likely see what questions come up, but also just to hear more about you, but also because I know that you wrote a book, which is called Your Pelvic Floor. And I've been carrying that around a lot just because I was like, I need to read this. So I want to hear about that, but also because you're a vagina coach. So I am so like, I have to say, I'm a little bit jealous of your title. I don't think I could call myself a vagina coach, but I was like, oh, what a great title that is to have for a profession, right?
Yeah, I laugh at it because it's not like, you know, when we're growing up, we have dreams and aspirations, and it's not like I had a vagina coach on my list of things that I wanted to be when I grew up, but I love being it. So.
Yeah, and now you just are, and I think it's a great, great name to have, we'll say. And we'll come to that. But how I mostly start the podcast is a bit of an icebreaker question, because as a vagina coach, my question to you is that if you had a word that would describe your current relationship with your vagina, what word would you give it?
Evolving.
Evolving.
Ooh. Evolving.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's, I never thought I would apply it to life and to our whole body, but specific, because I work in pelvic health, I'm always thinking about pelvic health. I think about my vagina a lot because of that. I think about it more than most people do, just because I'm always in the vagina world. But I like the word evolving, because it's not always that we have to be emerging from a bad place or regressing from a great place. We are always in a state of evolution and growth. And sometimes it's a hard place, and sometimes it's a great place and easy place to be. And, but I think instead of just looking at successes or failures, they seem so definite and like we have to always achieve, like, when have I succeeded? Have I failed? And I think a lot of people think of the word failure a lot and associate a lot of things with failure a lot. And I want to look at things a little differently. And I think we always have possibility, and we can always be evolving.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do like that word, just because not only having it come from you, of someone who works a lot in this field and who works with like pelvic health and vaginas, we'll say, right? Mm-hmm. Is where listeners sometimes feel that things, what you said, it comes with all kinds of other emotions, if it's from shame to, you know, am I okay? Is this how it should be? But also knowing that it is what you say, evolving. So it's not just a one way static thing. It's like a constant moving while we're aging too, you know?
Yeah. And it's not like, even if we're in a fantastic place and we in a good way, don't even think about our vaginas. It's not necessarily finite, nor does it mean that if we are in a place where we are really struggling for some reason, it's also not finite. And so I think we also have opportunities, and there can always be an evolution regardless of where you are.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So thank you. Like, yes. Yeah, so this podcast will also be evolving in our conversation, because mm-hmm. there's all kinds of different things that I wish to ask you, of course, but maybe just for me and for the people who are listening, it will be good to hear a little bit more about you, because I always think that when we start working with our vaginas or women who we want to help, and then it sometimes comes from somewhere. Mm-hmm. So I just actually maybe wonder of like, how does one end up to become a vagina coach?
I get asked this all the time. So really, I would say, if I look back to when I was young and going through school, primary school, and learning about bodies and sexual health, and there was a childbirth video that was shared with us. And I remember being afraid, and I went home and I looked at my mom a little differently. And I thought, well, she did that. And I started asking her questions, because I had fear, but I also had this curiosity. And my mom told me about her birth. And at the time when she gave birth, so I'm 52. And at the time that she gave birth in the 70s, it was very common to everybody to have an episiotomy, which is where they would cut part of the perineal tissue with the intention of creating more space. And it was supposed to make birth easier. And what ended up happening was it was creating more severe injuries for people. So my mom told me that that's just what you did. She had an episiotomy with my birth and my brother's birth. And in later years, she started to develop incontinence, and she had chronic back pain, and she had a tummy that wouldn't flatten. She stopped running. And so I was watching from that very early time, I was watching this evolution, there's that word, come with my mom. And so I sort of grew up thinking, I don't think I want to do that. I would like to be able to run, and I would like to be able to, you know, not have back pain and the things that I saw my mom struggling with. And when then I was older and I got married, decided that, okay, I do want to start a family. I had witnessed my sister-in-law giving birth the year before I was pregnant. And that was a bit of a kind of a pivotal moment, because it was the first time that I had seen birth kind of just how it's supposed to happen, an evolving labor, right? And it was nobody was coming in and telling her when to push. Nobody was holding her knees at her ears. No, she was free to move. And so it was this beautiful experience. But I also remember looking at her vagina and really her vulva and saying, holy, it's really, really large. It's really big. We started watching literally as my niece was crowning. And so it was miraculous. It was amazing. And then the next day I said to my sister-in-law, I said, is everything falling out of you? Because I saw how big it was. And she said, it feels pretty normal. And it feels a little tender, a little sore, but I peed and I pooped and I thought, okay, She didn't have any tearing. And she was in a sideline birth position that I was like, how do you give birth in that position? Because I'd never seen it before. And so that was a turning point for me. The following year, I'm pregnant. I'm using midwives. I was asking them about what else I could do to help prevent tearing. They told me about, I'd heard about perineal massage, and they had also told me about a product called the Epino, which the Epino is a biofeedback device manufactured in Germany. And it was from a doctor who saw women in Africa using gourds of increasing size to prepare their perineum and pelvic floor for birth. And so he thought, great idea, but most people around the world are not going to use gourds for birth prep. So he turned it into a more mainstream medical device. Yeah. I purchased one, I had a great experience. And then I thought, why isn't everybody using one of these? And then I contacted the company and said, hey, could I be a distributor? And that's how it started. But I didn't intend for it necessarily to be a business. I thought I'll just sell this to friends and other people have a little bit of extra pocket money. So that's what it was for a few years, just as it was. I used it for my second birth. Yeah. Also had, I didn't have any tearing with that birth either. So Epino stands for no episiotomy and also a reduction in tearing. So perineal tearing during vaginal childbirth. And then, 2009, I was laid off from my job. I then said, okay, let me see if I can turn this into a business. I started a website. I started to add other pelvic health products. I learned about pelvic floor physiotherapists who started to refer their patients to me. And I had never heard of a pelvic floor physiotherapist. So I met up with them and learned about what they do. And now I was trying to scream from the rooftops that anybody who's pregnant should be using an Epino. And then I was also now screaming from the rooftops, we should all also be seeing a pelvic floor physiotherapist once a year, like we see a dentist.
Yeah.
And so that was where things started. Then I started to see, and at this point, I hadn't had any pelvic health issues. And in my head, I thought, if I don't tear, I won't have incontinence like my mom. That was my thinking at the time. And then as I started to sell the Epino, I started to learn more terminology. I started to visit doctors. I learned about pelvic organ prolapse. I learned more about pelvic pain, this kind of thing. And then I started a second business with two other women. One was a pelvic health physio, and we wanted to optimize postpartum recovery because we were seeing that many other cultures around the world were honoring this time. And we were sprinting back to the gym at 2 weeks postpartum and taking selfies and trying not to look pregnant as fast as possible. And we felt like that was doing a disservice and increasing these pelvic floor symptoms that people had. And so we're kind of juggling the two businesses. And then I started to experience some incontinence. And I was like, well, hold on a minute. I didn't tear. I'm not supposed to have incontinence. So then I started to learn a little bit more. And of course, one of my partners was a pelvic physio. So I was learning from her. I took a further education with a group of pelvic physios and then was able to apply those principles to my own body. And it never really became a very big issue. I was able to overcome it very quickly. But I thought, this is exercise. This is a group of muscles. And we need to be treating it like we do other muscles in the body. We need some strengthening. We need some endurance. We need some mobility and release and relaxation and progressively load it. So that's kind of where things started to shift to not just selling these pelvic health products, but bringing this into a movement practice and moving beyond just go home and do 3 sets of 10, 10 second hold Kegels.
Yeah.
And then, fast forward probably 5-8 years or so, we ended up selling Belly's Inc. That was the second company that we started. Because none of us, the three of us who were working on it, none of us really loved manufacturing and we were starting to ourselves move into the perimenopause phase now. And that seemed to be the more relevant population of as to who was coming to us for help. And so we sold Belly Zinc. The Epino product, Health Canada implemented a new medical device licensing procedure. And with that, it was more costly and had more hoops to jump through. So the manufacturers of the Epino decided to take their product out of Canada. Mm-hmm. And so that meant that was one of the main reasons I had an e-commerce store. So I ended up shutting down my e-commerce store. I took all of my programs online. And then going through my own perimenopause battle, I was experiencing, I didn't experience incontinence again, but I started to experience pelvic organ prolapse. And I had some autoimmune challenges in there. I didn't know what perimenopause was at the time. I didn't understand all these things that were happening to me. And I kept thinking, I'm not changing anything. Why is my body changing? So really struggled with that. And for a while felt very much like a hypocrite, because here I am teaching people how to prevent and how to overcome all these challenges. And yet I'm doing all of those things and I'm still struggling. Mm. So that was a bit of a challenge.
Yeah.
And then I learned another exercise technique called the hypopressive method. I was able to reverse my stage 2 uterine prolapse. But along the way, I had also developed a stage 2 rectocele, which is another type of organ prolapse. And I ended up living with that for 9 years and eventually had surgery for that, because none of what I was doing was helping. And learned a whole heck of a lot about autoimmune conditions and perimenopause and menopause. And, yeah. And now that is the majority of who I support. And I have one product, which is my membership, and people come in and they have self-guided and directed workouts and challenges and meal plans. It's a very holistic approach to pelvic health, to give people an education about how they can put more control into their hands rather than thinking they have to rely on seeing a doctor, which can take months and months to get in to see.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that's kind of the evolution. So it started with, you know, thinking, oh, if I just prevent tearing, I won't have anything. But I have experienced incontinence. I have experienced pelvic organ prolapse. I have experienced pelvic pain for a short period of time post-surgery, so post-rectocele repair. And I feel very grateful that I have the knowledge and I have the community that I do, because I felt like I knew what to do. And even if I felt that I was facing an obstacle, I would be able to overcome that obstacle. Mm-hmm. And I know that that is not the same for a lot of people, because they feel very alone in this. They don't know that there is help. They don't know who to ask. They feel ashamed. And mm-hmm. So I feel really grateful. And now that really fuels a lot of what I do now.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is really what you said. It's a story of how it evolves itself anyway. And I always find it really interesting, especially with certain professions, of where it started and how kind of like the story itself didn't actually let go, even in your own experience and your own examples that you've given about, oh, actually I experienced a prolapse and I actually thought, like, hold on, or even when you said, hey, hold on, I thought I was doing everything right. It wasn't. And I really can understand that, how that then grips you and even want to help more. Mm-hmm, right. Mm-hmm. In the phase that you're in. But if we then go back to the actual pelvic floor, because one of the things that and I'm not going to say that this is still the case, but in the last, let's say, since 2018, since I decided to have my vision and to, oh, vaginismus, this is really where I want to support people in. So when I was younger, when, let's say, in 2004 is when I found out about vaginismus, and I born and raised in the Netherlands, so my process was very different when I was there. And then I came to the UK, and I, of course, was treated for vaginismus in a specific way, and I had a pelvic floor therapist or a physiotherapist that helped me out, or at least who taught me how to use my muscles. Then I came to the UK, and it was so interesting that I heard that the treatment in the UK was very different, was very much more focused on psychosexual therapy, and actually still really a disconnect with the body. So when we talked about pelvic floors, or when I was thinking about
the muscles. I wasn't even talking about pelvic floors. I was just thinking about my muscles, my strong muscles. Mm-hmm. Like, this is what I do. And this is what this physiotherapist had taught me. I realized that women that I was speaking to weren't necessarily focused on that at that time. And I only feel right now that there's more flow towards like pelvic health. But not only, I think, of course, it's not just for women, it's also for men. And the reason why I was carrying your book everywhere is because actually, one, I just wanted to read it. And then funny enough, I was speaking to my partner and all of a sudden his therapist or physiotherapist said something about pelvic floor. So we had this whole month of, why is no one talking about the pelvic floor? Like, like, and also being bilingual, I was like, what's the Dutch word for pelvic floor? Why am I, am what I is? Not?
Do you know?
Beckenbodem. Beckenbodem, yes. Or if I got that right. And if anyone comes to me and says, sorry, Audrey, you got that wrong. Sorry about that, because I've been in English for 17 years now. So I was like, ah, but we just had this whole thing. And even me going to a personal trainer just around the corner where they had this pelvic floor post or prenatal exercises or something like that. And I said to him, I said, hey, dudes, like, why don't you do this for men either? Because they also need to know where this is going, because we're all, it's carrying a lot, right?
Yeah.
But the funny thing is I don't think a lot of people know what it is. So if you would, if you could, in simple words, describe what is it? What is, like, what is, if someone's listening and they're like, pelvic floor, what do I have to do with that? I don't have a clue. Like, what will you tell them that the pelvic floor is or what it does?
The pelvic floor is a group of muscles in the it's not just one muscle. It is three different layers and multiple different muscles that form this group called the pelvic floor that closes off our pelvis. So if we wherever we are right now, if you're sitting or standing, even if you're walking, put your hands on the front of your pelvis on your pubic bone. People call the pubic bone. It is actually a joint. That's one attachment point. That's one place where this group of muscles attaches. And then if you're ever sitting on a hard surface chair, especially if you have less adipose tissue on your butt and you might feel those bony points through your butt cheek. Sometimes if you pull the flesh of your butt cheeks apart, you can feel a bit of a bony point through your butt cheek. Yeah. Those are called your sits bones, your ischial tuberosities. That's also an attachment point, one on either side for the group of muscles, the pelvic floor. And then on our backside, we have our sacrum, which is a triangular bone. And at the very tip of that, we have our coccyx or our tailbone. So people are very familiar with tailbone. They're very familiar with their pubic bone. They may not be quite aware of the two bones on the side, but those form a bit of a diamond shape. And the muscles that attach to close that space off is the pelvic floor. And the jobs of the pelvic floor are pelvic and spinal stability. So because of its attachment points on the pelvis, on the base of the spine, it is very central in how we in our core. It is the foundation of our core and helps manage movement and transfer loads from upper body to lower body. It also manages the openings that we have. So in female anatomy, we have the urethra, we have the vagina, we have the anus, and it manages those by saying it should stay closed when we don't want something to come out, like pee, poo, fart. It should open if we want something to come in, open if we want something to come out, like a childbirth. And the pelvic floor also manages our internal organs, so bladder, uterus, rectum, again, female anatomy. And it plays a role in our sexual response. It also acts like a bit of a sump pump. So if we think about the movement of the pelvic floor, it's not just this, you know, solid piece of muscle. It like any muscle in our body, it's moving and it's adapting and it's flowing as we do things throughout the day. And the relationship that the pelvic floor has with our diaphragm is really, really key. And when we are breathing in and out, in and out, in and out, there's this reciprocal relationship with the pelvic floor that is creating some circulation and acting like a little bit of a sump pump to move things in and around our body. So those are the main roles of the pelvic floor. And when it's working optimally, we don't even know it's there. We don't even think about it.
Yeah.
And when it's not working optimally, then we may start to experience symptoms. And now all of a sudden it becomes one of the only things we think about, because it is so central to so many things that we do in life. Elimination, sex, movement, you know, toileting, all these things. So when we have a challenge, it's now at the forefront and it's interfering with our capacity for being present with a partner or self-pleasure. It's interfering with our focus at work. It's interfering with our freedom of movement and desire for exercise because we don't like the symptoms or because we're afraid we're going to make it worse, or maybe somebody's told us we can't exercise because we have this challenge. So it really is, I argue, one of the most important groups of muscles in the body. And the male body is slightly different in that we it's the same pelvis. The pelvis is a little bit narrower. The hip bones are a little bit higher. The same attachment points for the pelvic floor. They have the anal opening as we do. There's obviously no vagina in the male anatomy. And the urethra is kind of, it's in a little bit of a, obviously it's in within the penis. And so it's not necessarily an opening directly in that musculature like we have our urethra and our vagina. So because of that, that's one reason why men are less likely to experience challenges. The other is people who have male anatomy are not becoming pregnant, are not menstruating, and are not going through menopause. And those are three very well-established risk factors for pelvic floor dysfunction. The main reason why men, not the only, but one of the main triggers for men to have pelvic floor dysfunction is prostate issues.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit later in life, usually.
Yeah. And that could again go into like thinking about erectile dysfunctions or anything like that. So then technically, if we then think of, like for me, when we're thinking about the topic of vaginismus, we come back to the same set of muscles that are important to maintain in whatever shape or form. But then, of course, what you said as well, like one of the things what I'm noticing, well, I'm getting a little bit older, or I feel, I don't even know, maybe it's because I've been reading your book as well, that I'm just very much aware of like my bladder and the morning of like, oh my God, like, ooh, like, I feel I need to go. Where I'm like, okay, Audrey, you need to do what Kim is saying in the book, or go again to like a pelvic floor therapist or something just to check, just because, you know, I will be 44 this year. Things are changing, as you said, you know, perimenopausal, who knows what's going on. But a lot of things are happening besides like just the general things, like when we think of like from, like our vaginas are evolving, right? Yeah. And we need to move with it, and focusing on a pelvic floor or paying attention to it is important.
And I think that, you know, you bring up a great point, which I love that you are, that you have the book and you're carrying it around, and that the seed has been planted that I should go see a pelvic floor physiotherapist. And you don't necessarily have any glaring issues right now, but so many people are waiting until they've been suffering for a long time and they're waiting for it to be so bad. And now I'm going to go get help. And I think if we had the knowledge and the guidance earlier in life, and we were, oh, I've been starting to feel a little bit of urgency. That's not how I normally am. I'm going to go see my pelvic physio, or I haven't seen my pelvic physio for 9 months or 10 months or whatever it is. But we've been very conditioned to see our dentist once or twice a year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And we do the teeth brushing and all that sort of stuff. Why are we not doing the same thing with our pelvic floor? Because that we are constantly evolving, and there's a whole hormonal piece in there that can exacerbate a lot of the issues. And so we'll get more into that. But I think I think it's important what you said, and important for other people to hear, is please don't wait until there is a major problem. It's never too late. And if you do have a major problem, absolutely still go. But let's be proactive if we have an opportunity to be.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's like, then if we go back to the vagina, it's in general, of course, something that carries a certain stigma with it, or it's also something we can't see. So, and what you say, then when there's an issue with it, then it's also hard to then go to the doctors to speak about it. But also, as we're not always educated, in like, for example, is what you said, like you were curious when you were younger, you spoke to your mom about it, you were present at a birth, and for other people be like, ooh, okay, la, 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 and they just keep on going until there is an issue or until things doesn't seem, between brackets, normal, or, you know, where they even find that hard to to then address.
And that was part of the when I first started my business and I was working primarily with pregnant women and new moms, I was a personal trainer and I trained as a doula. And a doula is a care provider for when you're pregnant. They don't deliver babies. They're more there for kind of like a coach or a support person. And so I took my knowledge from there and training from there, and I combined it with fitness, and I was called the fitness doula initially. And that was great. But then as I started to transition to that perimenopause, menopause zone, fitness doula didn't quite resonate. So I knew I needed some sort of a change. And vagina coach was, I was speaking to a group of women entrepreneurs, and I came up on stage. We were at this conference where all the speakers were some sort of coach, business coach, marketing strategy, sales. And I came up and I'm talking about pelvic health and how optimizing your pelvic health can make you a better mompreneur. And I joked, I said, well, now you have a vagina coach for your business. And it was a joke. But then it was like this light bulb. And I said, that's it. That's what I need to change my name to. And part of it was to step into this word that has so much stigma and shame and embarrassment. And people like to whisper vagina, you know, and just say it's a word, and it's a powerful place to be when you can say it without shame and embarrassment. And we people who have a vagina, we live with this part of our body. We deserve more education about the parts that we can't see.
Yeah.
We see our vulva, and a lot of people still call the vulva the vagina.
Yeah, exactly.
Vagina being the tube on the inside, but we deserve more awareness and education. And so that was part of the purpose of using this uncomfortable word as part of my brand.
Yeah.
Was to get people to like, what? Did you say vagina? And I've been, people said, you know, the vagina is not the pelvic floor. And I get that, but it just, I wanted there to be that kind of sticker shock and that stop people in their tracks, and it's memorable, and take the shame out of this body part that is contributing to the reason why so many people are struggling.
Yeah. The body part that is sometimes ignored. And I think especially when, like, you know, when I think of vaginismus, the dissociation from it, which then can cause all kinds of other issues, which what we said, relation to your pelvic floor. But yeah, for myself, I knew, like, what had helped me a lot was, even if things didn't necessarily instantly go well, it was to understand the set of muscles that I was using. And I had that through, like, as you mentioned in the book as well, about if it's like biofeedback, you know, and so that for me gave an image of, oh, this is what's happening, or this is what my body does. Or because I, like, even with my coaches, I sometimes have these conversations saying, with a child, how do we teach a child to go to the bathroom? Like, there is actually, like, I can't remember that my mom was saying, and you do this, and then this is the muscle. It's just like, you know, your bodily instinct, like the words that are used, the way you, how your body responds to that, to go to the bathroom and to release or to hold it up, right? And it's so interesting because we don't ever think about it, because we just all of a sudden that we are potty trained randomly, like even with the dog, you know, and walking the dog is like potty training the dog. Like, the dog doesn't know half of the words we use, but for whatever reason, they know what they have to do in their body to stop and start a certain process.
Yeah.
But it's just a set of muscles that we don't know, and how we don't know how it works at times. So if I can ask you, what's the difference between, because I know, like, you're, what you said, you're working with now women as well who are in a premenopausal phase too. But what's the difference between you as a vagina coach and a pelvic floor therapist?
Yeah, so pelvic floor physiotherapists are, they are trained as a physiotherapist, and then they take additional training in the pelvic floor and will become licensed to evaluate and treat beyond the opening of the vagina or the anal opening as well. And so that's a whole designation, and they are licensed professionals. And what I do is I'm a movement professional. I'm a fitness professional and a personal trainer. And I'm taking the principles that we use for all of the other muscles in our body and creating movement programs that can help prevent and overcome things like incontinence and organ prolapse. So I don't do well, even at one point I did work in person with people. I did not have never done internal evaluations. That's beyond my scope. So I look at things like posture and do movement testing and take the health history, but it's really, I'm a personal trainer and I'm applying fitness principles to the pelvic floor. Yeah. And I work in collaboration with pelvic physio. I refer absolutely everybody. I say ad nauseum, everybody should see a pelvic floor physiotherapist once a year, even if you have no symptoms, especially if you do. And the intention is the physios are really the hands-on manual therapists. They have additional training and a much more elaborate toolbox, I guess you can say. They will then often provide exercises for somebody to go home and do. And sometimes as we, you know, physio exercises have a bad name. People call them the dinky physio exercises, or they're boring, or, and so the commitment level, people can still have a motivation, but they don't always necessarily do them because they're kind of boring and they think that they're always in rehab and they want to do the fun stuff. So I'm trying to bridge that gap and providing whole body exercises that don't feel like the dinky physio exercises, but that are still helping achieve the same thing.
Yeah.
And so I'm always referring, everybody I think should see one if they can, but then there's also people who can't, whether it's geographically, maybe financially. And so again, this is an alternative for people to at least get some help. I don't want it to feel like, oh, if you can't see a pelvic physio, then sorry, you're out of luck. You're never going to have any help. That's not true at all. There's a lot that people can do in their, with their own knowledge. So
I'm
trying to step in and do that.
Yeah. And I understand that. And I think it's a good thing because it's like a full body. Like it's not just one part, because what you said, the pelvic floor already has multiple parts. And then while I looked into your book, like, you know, if we think about like as well the other muscle sets, thinking about in your back and, well, like, to be honest, I don't know all the technical terms and I'm not even going to try to say them. But I was like, yes, like, we are one oiled machine. I always say it's not just exactly, it's all connected. But in your profession, and because, you know, vaginismus can be so many different things for people or different stages in their lives, but what is what does it mean in your dictionary? So if you think about, like, have you worked with women who also come with this specific challenge, I would say? So what does your dictionary say about what vaginismus is?
Yeah, so vaginismus is essentially involuntary spasms or a reaction of the pelvic floor muscles with insertion. So something, it could be a tampon, it could be a toy, it could be a partner's finger, penis, it could be a speculum, could be anything trying to be inserted, the muscles have a reaction involuntarily to not allow that. So we can't accommodate that activity or that insertion. And there can be primary and secondary. Primary meaning it's been there from the very first time somebody had an experience of insertion. Secondary meaning they have been able to insert previously, and now for some other reason, they can't accommodate insertion. And so there's no one really knows why it happens. We know some of the things that may contribute to it. And a lot of it can be trauma and fear and anxiety components, not always, but that's usually a very big part of it. And so it can make treatment a little bit challenging. And the pelvic floor physical therapist, as I mentioned, they will do the internal, but somebody with vaginismus, that may be prohibitive. They may not be able to experience, at least initially, that portion of the treatment. And that doesn't mean that, again, that, oh, you shouldn't go see a pelvic floor physiotherapist. They have a lot of other therapies and practices within their toolbox that can be helpful as well, and potentially get to the point where you can accept or experience insertion. So that's kind of the general terminology of what vaginismus is. In terms of people who come to me, some people come to me after trying other things, and I'm very open saying my program is not really even designed to tackle or cure or treat. However, there may be some things that you do in the program that may be play a role in, maybe part of what enables you to get to that next level. And a lot of it would be more of the body awareness, the releasing tension, the trusting of the body, the trusting of the pelvic floor through movement, but also through visualization and breath strategies. So yeah, that's kind of the role that I would play.
One of the things, of course, when we talk about the pelvic floor, where women who don't have vaginismus, who would think about, you know, okay, how can I strengthen my pelvic floor if I have, for example, urine loss or anything like that, or something's happening, of like, how can I strengthen it? And but then what you then forget to do is to learn how to release, because right. I feel that we're, or to be honest, I feel that sometimes we don't even know how tight our, like, that we're clenching our butt like a lot of time, and just walking around like with a tight butt.
It's true, and it's partly, again, because we aren't given proper education about that part of the body. We aren't given some awareness about it being muscles. And if you think, like, I've been in the fitness industry for a really long time, and every year for, I'd say up until about the last 5 years, everything was always harder, harder, harder. It had to be harder the next year. It had to be more intense the next year. It had to be just like, we were always seeking the most intense exercise. And thankfully now, after all that, with so many people getting injured and just, you know, with all the stress that we have in our world, and COVID played a role in changing things, but there's now this softening that's happening, and there's more mind-body awareness, and yoga has been around for a long time, but it's really, I think, more appreciated now. But even yoga, like, they're trying to make it's power yoga, and it's yoga, like, they're still, it's like, just be still. And so we don't really appreciate the need to soften and the need to surrender and the need to release tension. And we're very good at doing. And the same with pelvic floor. We think of, I'm going to do the best damn Kegel I've ever done, and that's what's going to help me. But sometimes, even though it might seem counterintuitive, we need to soften. We need to let go. We need to lengthen those muscles first to find our power and to allow more movement and build some of the trust that we have. Because if we're afraid of leaking, we're guarded. If we're afraid of a prolapse, we're guarded. If we're afraid of something being painful, we're guarded. And finding ways, lots of different ways, but finding the one that works for you that allows you to soften and to surrender is really, really key. So that's a lot of what I have, even for anybody, but a lot of what I do is we release always first, and then go into the work.
Like, one of the things that I read in your book was, because I know that your book is not necessarily focused on vaginismus, but you've got like a page on it. And one of the things that you actually just described about, you know, when we're afraid of incontinence, when we're afraid for prolapse, we kind of, you know, tighten up. And then that in its turn can then lead to vaginismus, because your vagina or your pelvic floor will say, oh, let's tighten in moments where you don't want it. Right.
And we often are not even aware that we're doing it.
No.
That's the challenging part is, again, we've just ignored this part of the body because we haven't really, sometimes there's shame, sometimes there's fear, sometimes there's trauma. Sometimes it's just that we just didn't even know that we need to pay attention. So these reactions are often, we don't even know that we're doing it. Exactly. And so that makes it more challenging. And to now, well, then if I don't even know that I'm clenching, how do I know to unclench and to let go? And right.
Exactly.
So it does take a little bit of work, but when, you know, that's why I use visualization a lot. And even body mapping, like touching the points on our body where muscles are, to help us understand the ways that it's working, and then we can we can, and people come up with their own visualizations once they understand where they're looking. But it can be challenging. It's not just a, oh, just relax your muscles. Oh, okay. It's not that
yeah,
easy.
No. And this is what I find so funny, because we easily always say like, oh yeah, you know, when people go to the doctor, it's like, yeah, just relax. Like, it's like, yeah, what do you mean? Like, yeah, it's not just a button that your body will all of a sudden relax. Like, you know, just relax. It's going to be fine. Where it's like what you said, we don't know most of the time when we're not even relaxed. And if we do a visualization, or if we do learn about how these muscles feel and move, as you said, if it's like prior to having any conditions, when we understand how the muscles, so we can understand how we're feeling. And when we're like standing and we're like, oh, I'm clenched, I'm completely tight, right? Then we can learn how to relax it more. One of the things you just said, which I was curious about, because of course there's the Kegel, you know, there's like a lot of things about Kegels, but then if we connect it to your knowledge of the pelvic floor and vaginismus, because I think sometimes people come across these things and they're like, yeah, that's what I need to do. Where my understanding is, because let me just quickly check actually, because I wrote something down here and I'm not sure if they're connected, when you in your book talk about like Kegels, but then you also talk about pelvic floor hypertonicity, where I pronounce this right. Is it similar, same, different? Like what would you say about vaginismus, Kegels, or pelvic floor hypertonicity?
So somebody could potentially have, so hypertonicity is more tone. Hyper is more, tonicity meaning tone or tension in the muscles. So hypotonicity would be low tone. Hyper is more tone. You could have somebody that has vaginismus that doesn't necessarily have hypertonicity. It's an in the moment reaction that they have. So their overall tone of the muscles may be quite good, but it's the insertion portion that where the muscles have that non-optimal response of tensioning. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Then somebody could have hypertonicity and vaginismus. I wouldn't say they have to be, they don't have to both exist at the same time. And there are other people who don't have vaginismus who have hypertonicity. And again, I don't do any internal evaluations, but when I ask my colleagues and friends who are internal therapists, overwhelming majority say that the majority of their patient population is hypertonic. And there's many reasons why somebody may have more tone than what would be considered optimal. And that could be some of the similar things with vaginismus: fear, anxiety, trauma. It could be scar tissue related. It could be constipation related. It could be incontinence, prolapse, like the fear of that. So coming back to the fear component, it could be posture related. It could be footwear related. It could be maybe sitting a lot, sedentary, not a lot of diversity of movement. There's so many factors that could come in and play a role in why somebody maybe has more tone than what would be considered optimal.
Yeah.
And so to your Kegel question, Kegels are a voluntary contraction and relaxation. So it's a range of motion of the pelvic floor muscles. And Dr. Arnold Kegel was who coined the term, and he was seeing women in his population, in his patient group who had given birth, who were experiencing more challenges postpartum with incontinence and pelvic floor challenges. And so he used biofeedback to help them see the contraction and relaxation of the muscles.
Yeah.
And out of that developed this protocol of Kegel exercises. And Kegels have taken a bad rap. And I actually contributed to that for a while. Like I kept thinking, oh, Kegels. But at the end of the day, they're very evidence-based. Kegels do work when they are done correctly, when they are done consistently, but not for every single condition either. And a lot of people will be told if they have a hypertonic pelvic floor.
Yeah.
So potentially a vaginismus person, but not necessarily. If they are told they have a hypertonic pelvic floor, or they maybe even just know they do, they may be told not to do Kegels and maybe they should do what some people call reverse Kegels. And that's basically letting go and releasing.
Yeah.
And while I agree with that to some extent, I agree. Obviously, I told you I spent a lot of time getting people aware of the need to release and to relax. And we start all the exercise routines with that. However, that doesn't take out the benefit of taking the muscles through, guiding the muscles through their range of motion. So Kegels can play a role in that education of what does a contraction feel like? What does a relaxation feel like? And some people have a harder time with the relaxation, at least initially. And there was one interesting piece of research that looked at people doing max voluntary contractions. So basically thinking like the Mac Daddy of Kegels, I'm going to think about lifting up a piano with my pelvic floor and like the max squeeze. And that actually elicited a greater relaxation response, which I thought was interesting. And so sometimes, like, again, if we just take out the Kegels completely, I think we're missing some opportunities for improvement and education and awareness. So I wouldn't have them do max. I wouldn't have them do every single repetition, but I wouldn't remove it completely. And I maybe spend a couple of weeks with just softening and relaxing and releasing and visualization, but I would add in those Kegel contractions for that benefit of movement and blood flow and circulation. And it's the body language as well is the muscle movement, right?
Yeah. And it's interesting because also, like, and this is just an opinion, maybe not a fact at all, but I feel that when you talk about how it's been developed from Mr. Kegel, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he then was talking about biofeedback. So he wasn't necessarily, like, I feel like the Kegel exercises started to have his own story on its own when it's about strengthening, yeah. Where actually, when we go back to the basic of where he created it, it was about the feedback,
exactly.
Of the contraction and release feeling. And I think that when I look back all these years ago, when I had my PT, where I was as well, like, hooked onto a machine for me to see like how my muscles moved, that was kind of like the Kegel exercises of, like, yeah. You know, seeing how what my muscles do and how I can release, but also how I can, like, and even if I think about my own sexual experiences of, like, when I was trying to figure out vaginismus in the depth of it, I was like, okay, so it's now tight.
Yeah.
It is released. And it wasn't even, you know, like, it was like, but just for me to know. And I think you say, yeah, it's education and also knowing how it feels. Because I think that if we're not connected to it, we don't know when it's tight or when we release. So you can look at it as Kegel was what Dr. Kegel had created, the idea,
yep.
Or the Kegel exercises of what's on the market of how it's marketed by saying, do Kegel exercises to strengthen your vagina to lift a piano up, kind of.
And there are, of course, like fitness does, they're like, okay, let's make this harder and let's have Kegel weights. And there's a place for them. And I absolutely support that can be a helpful tool for many people. It's not where I would recommend somebody start by any means, but there are lots of devices that really can help us in our education. Most of them would involve insertion. So we need to get somebody would need to get to the point to be able to accommodate that to have the biofeedback. The other ways, like with wireless EMG, which are electrodes placed externally, they can be helpful as well. There is a little bit of crossover from other muscle groups. It's not as sensitive as something that would be inserted, mm-hmm. but there's sometimes I think, oh my gosh, what's this new thing? But at the same time, I think, I'm grateful for this evolution and this, there's that word again. I'm grateful for the people that are thinking about ways to make things better sometimes, ways to bring in technology, like leverage the advancements that we have available to us that can serve people, because there's also what works for one person. We can't just say, oh, Kegels are for everybody. They're not. Same as a Kegel device, not the same one's going to be for everyone. So I'm grateful that we have really a plethora of tools that we can use.
Yeah, and options and knowledge that is out there and that's coming out there. So I know, like, I just want to make sure, because I am just chatting away, but I had like a few questions because I've been talking about your book as if everyone already has read the book and all the things. And, or to be honest, like, I felt it was good just to have it and to learn. Right. So,
yeah.
But who did you write the book for? Because tell me about, because you're like, your pelvic floor, a practical guide to solve your most intimate problems. Right. So, and what I said earlier, like, it's not necessarily focused on like vaginismus or anything like that. But what is important for people to know about this book that you've created?
I'm trying to decide what would I say is important. It's funny because when I was approached to write it, I hesitated. Like, I wasn't really sure, you know, do I want to commit to this? Because I'd written a book before and it's a lot of work. And I thought, you know, is it going to be, anyway, I'm very glad that I did in the end, because it really has, I think it's been a really great resource for people. I think it's a very, it's an easy way for people to learn. Sometimes people, if there is that shame and embarrassment, it's a way for people to learn privately. They don't have to be online. They don't have to, right? It's something they can hold, refer to whenever they need. And so what's important about it is that it's knowledge that can help, and it's knowledge that can be shared. So I love that people can read it and they can pay it forward, and somebody else can read that book and benefit from it. And my hope is that it becomes a traveling, what was that book, the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, or some title like that, right? Something like that.
Yeah.
And so I hope that it becomes this shared resource that people take what they need and then evolve it.
And
share it, and so that other people can have those learnings as well. So I think it's important to give a base understanding of what the pelvic floor is, why it's important, what are some of the more common signs and symptoms, because sometimes, again, people have these and we're told like, oh, that's normal as you age, that's just part of being a woman, oh, that's what happens after you have kids. And so much there's so much acceptance of suffering, and I want that to change. And I want people to know that it's not normal and not something they need to accept. They can choose to accept it if they don't want treatment, but I want them to know that options exist if they want something different.
Yeah. That's what I liked as well when I was scanning it through again. It's very much like information that you could, one, use to give others. Like, for example, my mom is turning 80 this year. Mm-hmm. And recently we had this moment that I was like, why are you doing this? And it's like, oh, you know, mm-hmm. at night, like, you know, she only has one toilet, that's all the way downstairs. And, you know, and I was like, oh, mom, like, actually, funny enough, I've been reading this book. And so what you also could do is, like, you know, like, there are some exercises here, but maybe also talk to your physiotherapist, who you see, mm-hmm. if they do know some exercises that could help you build that up. It doesn't mean that it has to be like, you know, she's 80 and everyone would say, yeah, when you're 80, that's what you do, you know, or when you're older, that's what you do. It's like we surrender to our age,
right?
When our body, our age is, and like, yeah, this is just what it is. I just need to go to pee for like 100,000 times at night, you know, or yes. I might leak, and that's where I will have, like, you know, my pads and, you know.
Yeah.
But I thought it was really, like what you say, is a paid forward part, because I was looking at it and then spotting some things about myself, but then also thinking like, yeah, I always have really strong muscles, thinking about my like vaginismus situations in the past. And I was like, actually, hold on, my body's changing. I noticed that if I'm standing in front of the front door and I have the key in my hand and I need to pee, and all of a sudden I need to run where I didn't have to run for like 20 minutes on the journey home. So I started practicing some stuff in the morning, like what's there in your book of me thinking of like, Audrey, you don't have to go yet.
Talk to your
partner. Like talking to my pelvic floor. It's no needed. Yeah. There's no stress. You were fine for the last 20 minutes. Let's just do another round in the house. Don't straight run to the bathroom.
Yeah.
You know, like the psychological part as well, how our bodies work. And in that.
Totally.
So I do really appreciate that. And I think what you said, I do hope that even if it's just a knowledge about a pelvic floor, that it comes out there for people to be more aware of the set of muscles that are keeping us up, or not keeping us up, but that are keeping everything in as well. Well,
and they are keeping it, like, if I think about, you know, I love the word that you said, we're just sort of surrendering. We're like, oh, I'm just old now, so that's, it's the end. And we give up. And the pelvic floor is so central to our longevity. And again, if we have these tools earlier in life, and if we can like think of continuous improvement, I don't feel like we have to just be like, oh, well, there's no magic age that you have to stop now because you're 80 or because you're 70 or you're 90 or whatever. I think, of course, we face aging and we have changes, but let's be as resilient as we can to that aging for as long as we can for our whole lives. Right. Yeah. And it's never too late. And I don't want people to surrender. I think that we are always capable of adapting, and we are always in that evolution and until we're no longer on this earth. So
Yeah. And I think that as well for women who have vaginismus, like what you said, it's not a one-stop shop situation. It's like, learning about what your body's doing and how important it is of, you know, the muscles that are there and using it in very, like, you know, we're helping in very different ways. If it's from going to the bathroom, as you said, to our sexual health in itself. And even, you know, for us who are able to carry children, you know, what that does too, and what effects that have, and not to take it for granted that it's just our vagina / pelvic floor muscles sort of things that are just, you know, that we can't see all the time.
Yeah, it's the challenge with, I was talking about this on another, I don't remember what I was talking about, but we receive a diagnosis, a term, and it can be helpful. It can be, oh, that explains a lot of things, and now I know why it's happening. But that diagnosis can also sometimes be like, we start to identify, I have vaginismus.
Mm.
And we don't think of it as something that we can not have, or, right? So we associate with that identity of it. And that sometimes can put up barriers where we just think of it as finite.
Yeah.
Oh, I have vaginismus. And so that's a reason why I can't. Oh, that's the reason why I can't. That's the reason why I can't. And I always encourage people to put yet. So if you say the word can't, you say, I can't do that yet.
Yes.
I can't blah, blah, blah yet. And put that, plant that seed of possibility and evolution.
Yeah.
Who knew I would say that so many times?
So many times. No, but I love it. But it's like what you said, it's a set of muscles. And I think that we have to treat it as the way that we use other muscles in our bodies, because when we have a neck ache or an Achilles situation, we don't say, like, I don't know if there's a specific term, but we're not going to say, I am now the person who has a bad Achilles. And that's the end of my life, right? That's the end. And that's, so I will never walk normally again. No, we go and speak to someone about it and get exercises and learn how to use, or what we have to do. If we have to rest, or if we have to walk more, or if we have to do some stretches, like we do all these things with the other set of muscles. But then these are the muscles that we might not instantly see and understand where, what you're saying, like, even we can say like, oh, I have vaginismus, so I am vaginismus now forever. It's more like, no, I have vaginismus, so that means there's something that my muscles are either doing or not doing. And to learn about it. So just to get maybe a bit more to the end of our, because I feel like I can talk to you forever, and I was like, oh my god, I will likely call you back one day and say, hey Kim, I got another thing that I want to talk to you about. But if you have one myth that you want to debunk about our vaginas, what would you wish to correct? Or like, if there is a debunking of a myth, what myth is there that you wish that we could change?
There's so many of them. And I think really the bigger theme is kind of what we just said, where that if we have something now, it's that we have that forever. And so I want people to understand that there is always possibility of improvement and change. It's not an end of the road scenario. And I think a lot of people they see these barriers and they feel like they're these insurmountable hurdles in front of them. And they just now are just like, oh, well, that's never going to be possible for me because of this. And so I think I would like people to have a more hopeful outlook, and that they can move past where they are now, for better or for worse. We can have regression, and that's okay. That's not a failure. We can have progression, and that's great. That doesn't mean that it will always be that way. So appreciating the good times, but being not hypervigilant, but being paying attention. Our pelvic floor, our vaginas deserve care and attention and love. And I think it's a place that we often, it's the shame piece. And it's also the piece of, you know, I hate that I can't have insertive sex. I hate that I can't do this. I hate that. And so it's, we feel anger and resentment. There's a lot of emotion that can get tied up around our pelvic floor. And so I want to shift people to a more hopeful outlook.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. That's why we're here. Right.
Yeah.
I love that you're saying that, because I feel exactly the same way, because it's not, we're not going to make any changes by stopping ourselves through the hate for our own body parts sometimes.
Right.
Or the shame. So another question I had with you is, like, what is one thing you wish everyone would know about our vaginas and pelvic floor? Which might be the same answer, but you never know, me might have something else.
I recently made a post with an acronym called ELM, E-L-M. And I want people to know that it isn't like Kegels are, again, I like them. They are evidence-based. I use a sort of form of them, but they are, it's not the blanket statement to solve all pelvic floor issues. It's not Kegel exercises. And it really requires a whole body approach. And so it's exercise is one component, but then there's also the tissue support, and the word, or that the acronym ELM is estrogen and moisturizer, vaginal moisturizer, and lubricant. Sorry, I put those the opposite way. So estrogen, lubricant, moisturizer. Estrogen is something that we have in our tissues and all over our body, and we produce less as we age. And once we reach our menopause, there's a drastic decline of estrogen. And there's a whole kind of umbrella term, part of menopause, called genitourinary syndrome of menopause. And the loss of estrogen is one component of what contributes to that. And vaginal estrogen is something that I consider to be almost like an essential nutrient from around the age of 45 onwards for the rest of our lives. And that can play a role in helping with tissue elasticity, keeping things supple, and avoiding dryness and burning and irritation. So for especially people who have a history of pain or hypertonicity or vaginismus, now we're at a point in life where there's other things that are adding other discomforts. Knowing that over 80% of women will experience that, let's step in early, around the age of 45, and replace our vaginal estrogen. So that could be a cream, it could be a tablet, it could be a cream will be more accessible for people who may have insertion troubles. So estrogen, then there's a lubricant for when there is something insertion-wise, with or without a partner. And then there is moisturizer, vaginal moisturizer, most often are used with, manufactured with hyaluronic acid. Hyaluronic acid is something we make in our bodies. We make less as we age as well. We also make less collagen. So when we can use these to support the tissues, it can help with comfort. It can help remove a lot of the symptoms that are, you know, some people can overcome things along the way, and then we get to menopause and we're thinking, oh my gosh, like there's more, and there's this, and We just sometimes you just want to not have to think about. But I think if we have the knowledge ahead of time, and if we are proactive, it's not, again, something we're trying to overcome. It's something that we are maintaining and managing so that we don't have those other issues. So estrogen, vaginal estrogen, usually people would use it twice a week, but that would be dependent on what your doctor would prescribe. Lubricant for anything that would be insertion. or sexual activity with or without a partner, and vaginal moisturizer. You can use it daily, multiple times a day, and it will help the tissues retain moisture and help reduce some of that dryness and irritation that some people may feel just by even without anything being inserted.
But like, when you talk about, for example, like with moisturizer, like, of course, thinking about certain conditions where dryness is already there and where your body is not necessarily making it themselves. What you said. So elm, we've got the it's like a whole new word. Or is there also another tree called elm? I'm not sure, but like ELM, right? Like, it's a good thing to remember it that way. At least we won't forget it that way. So, and as well, like, one of my last questions, if you think of, just to finish the sentence, vaginas are
powerful.
Amazing. 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 Yes, because they are. And I think we keep forgetting it. They are extremely powerful, all the thing. And that's the reason why we kind of need to know what creates the power, right?
Yes, if that is, exactly. And harness that power.
Like, because thinking about vaginismus, like, our vaginas are freaking powerful because we can shut it all down. We can shut it down without us even knowing it. So, but Kim, it was so lovely to speak to you. If anyone wants to find you somewhere, how can they best find you? Where? What is the? Is there the website? Is there a page? Where can they find you?
Yeah, thank you very much. This was a great conversation. Vaginacoach.com is my website, and if you also just put Vagina Coach into Google, you'll find me on some social media platform. All of my handles are at Vagina Coach. And I really appreciate the work that you do. And thank you very much for having me on your show.
No, thank you, because I'm so happy to just have this conversation. And I feel I'm only stopping it just so I don't hijack your morning completely. But what I will do, I will make sure that all your information is as well in the show notes, we'll say, so they can find you and find all your handles. And if there's ever anything else that is coming on your way, please do let me know, because I feel that we can talk for hours. But I just want to thank you and thank all my listeners as well to come back to the podcast. I will also put a link for your book, because I think it's always good for everyone to know more about the pelvic floor. And as I have it myself, I'm just happy to just recommend it for people who wants to know more about it. And especially if you notice, like, if it is related as well with incontinence, and just knowing like all the different things of how it moves, and the exercises that are also in the back of your book, which is helpful. Thank you so much.
And it was nice to meet you.
It was lovely to meet you. And I hope this is not the last time I see you as well.
So, maybe in London again.
Maybe in London. Oh, yes. Please. don't ever come to London without saying hi.
Will do.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. And we'll speak to each other soon again. This was the VME podcast, Let's Name It, Not Shame It, with Audrey Cairo. Don't hesitate to reach out or connect on Instagram on Let's Call Her V, or find all my other details on audreycairo.com/VME. Please know that while podcasts can be a great source for information or stories, this is not a source or substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. So always consult a qualified healthcare professional for any medical advice. And while it might be scary or difficult sometimes, don't forget to ask for what you need. You got this. Thanks for listening.